is when the missionary, he was here for about 29, 30 years. And the last 6-7 years or so that he was here, he used to have dances for the school children, you know, for the young people. Try to keep them out of mischief. We used to play games. I believe it was every night, Monday to Friday, till about 9:30, maybe from 7 o'clock to 9:30, and we used to pay a quarter, the ones that could, to come in, and we used to buy games.
What kind of games is that?
Monopoly, Parcheesi, checkers, dominoes, all kinds of different games. And then maybe dance once a week. My father boy used to dance too. He started to learn.
He used to draw pictures a lot.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. He drew a picture of my grandma and grand. Very lifelike. I don't know where it is now. Maybe in Spokane, Washington, I guess.
Yeah, we saw that there, you know. Mm-hmm. Kurt and I went with Madeline Solomon this February. We saw a picture of you when we were really young. At least Madeline said it was you.
Wow.
Yeah. Did he ever give pictures to people that he drew in town?
Mm-mm. No, I don't think so.
Well, I guess the missionaries must have had a strong influence here in the motto, because they were here a long time, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. 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 Now we have other religion trying to come in, you know.
What religion is that?
I don't know these people back here. We have another minister and his wife living here. I don't think anybody goes see them. I don't know what they're here for. I mean, there's no sense in being here. I think it's just a waste of their time, you know. Another group of people, about 3 or 4 young girls, came to visit with them. And they wanted to have Bible study. And the people in town didn't like it. So we had a meeting one evening with them, this song. And, they told us we couldn't stop them, so we just let them go. But the smaller kids went to them. They were playing games outdoors and telling stories, I guess. I don't know about what. Although a lot of, especially the young people, don't go to church. I don't think anybody would turn away and join them, or anyone else, you know. Everybody in town are Catholics.
It's been a Catholic here for a long time, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm. I forgot how many years. it was quite a few years ago when we first started having 5th of August. 5th of August, we have a lot of, you know, big celebration. We have races and ball games, dances and stuff like that during the weekend. 5th and 6th.
What is that for?
It's when the first time the missionary came, it was August 5th. I forgot the year. Anyway, maybe about 10, 12 years ago, we celebrated the first 5th of August, which was the 50th anniversary. So, missionaries probably been here for 60, 65 years or so.
Well, what things do you remember about the missionaries when you were growing up?
For one thing, stick dance was forbidden. You heard of stick dance?
Yeah.
One thing, Father Bo, our most favorite missionary, was very much against stick dance. And, we never had no stick dance for, oh, I don't know, maybe 15 years. And finally, I believe it was after he moved. I don't remember. Anyway, the bishop said it was okay to have the stick dance. And, we started having it every other year now. There's only two places in Alaska that have it, Caltech and Nulato. And the bishop said that it was okay to have it, we start having the same year, one in Caltech and one up here, and didn't work out too good. So we made agreement between the two villages that when Caltech have it 1 year, Nulato will have it the next year. And it started working out better.
Was that because people travel back and forth?
No, I guess it was because you lose interest if you have it too many times, I guess. And then, like you say, to another reason was people come from a long way, so they wouldn't go to two. You couldn't afford to fly to two stick dances in the same year, you know, especially if you come from Fairbanks or Anchorage. We had even people or a person come over from Rome to hear the last two stick dances. That's a long way.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Father used to preach against it. Although we didn't believe, you know, we just did it for fun, I guess. But Father Bo used to think that the people really believed in, they were adoring mostly, or more or less adoring the stick. You know, we put up a stick in the hall, in the center, and you dance around it. That was his thought, I guess. But no, we just do it for fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, what kind of meaning did that stick have? Is it just...
I cannot express it. But we put up the stick dance for dead people. And to pay the people that help bury our dead. You pick out someone that you think did the most. A lot of times, you know, you can't remember who did the most during someone's death because you're grieving. And a lot of times, just like you don't even pay attention. So you have to ask other people sometimes and ask who you think did the most or maybe the coffin, lumber for the casket or something like that. Who bought it? Well, you'd pick out one person and you'd dress that person more or less to thank him for doing that. And then the rest of the people that helped bury him. Or the rest of the people that helped to make boots or gloves, mittens, cap. Or helped to buy clothes, anything like that. you give them little gifts, more or less, to thank them. And that's what the stick dance is for.
And, when people are grieving, is it usually, do they usually have a hard time remembering things or thinking about what's going on?
Well, a lot of times, right, you don't know. Maybe you can see what's going on, but you forget it, you know. I remember when we lost our little boy, I thought I'd never lived through it. The only one that pulled me through that time was Paul. Do you know Paul, my oldest boy?
Mm.
He was a baby at that time. And he's the one that I believe pulled both of us through, Josephine and I. He was the baby, and we just depended on him, more or less. You know, it's very hard to express how you feel. It hurts, constantly hurt inside.
Well, I noticed people really help each other out in the dying, you know, like some places outside, they just don't do it that
way. Right. Here in town, people, it seemed to get closer, more united, and we tried to help each other in any way we could, you know. To make it easier for the close relation.
What are the different ways people help out when someone dies?
You bring food. Visit, you know, to stay with them. Maybe talk with them. Like, this summer, Henry. You haven't talked to Henry yet?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he lost his boy, you know. You heard about it, maybe, mm-hmm. James. He was about 25 years old, I guess, and it was very, very hard for Henry. And I had to try to comfort him a lot, you know. I lived with them for a year or two, Henry, when we were growing up. I take him as my brother, and I used to like James a lot. I used to spend a lot of time with Henry during the first few days after the accident. I knew how he was hurting, you know. And, he thanked me for being with him. And then after 3-4 days, he got over the initial shock. It's like, I started going down to search for his boy. Searched for him for 2 weeks, didn't find him. Finally drifted up. And going back to how we help each other, like I say, we bring food, visit with them, play cards. And when time to bury the dead, some people may bring blankets or help to make boots or gloves, cap, maybe. And then all the men dig the grave, no pay, whenever churches are there. And then we bury the dead.
Sometimes it's hard work to do in the grave.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. It's very hard. Especially in the winter, when the ground is frozen. So a lot of the boys go up. Most of the time, I never help in that part because I always have to work in the post office. But I try to help in other ways. and people understand. And when they're digging or when they're burying, they don't work very long. They maybe 5-10 minutes and keep taking turns. That way nobody gets too tired or work too long, you know. Summertime it's easy. The ground is not frozen. But winter it's very hard. Okay, what else?
I was thinking about how nice it is people help each other. Well, maybe we should go back again to more of your growing up. You said you went to school whenever you were
in town. Yes.
So about how often would you be in town?
When we go out in September to down here to 10 Mile, Cudwood. Maybe we used to come up in November. So it would be December, January, February, and March. And then around the middle of April, we used to go to Cayo. So that's December, January, February, March, April. Maybe 5 months out of the year.
Was everybody doing that? So?
No, not everybody.
So school would be going the whole time?
Oh yes, the school would be going all the time.
Would that be hard to catch up sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
So how many years did you go to school?
I think I went to school till I was maybe 17. And I was in one grade for about 3 years, sixth grade.
And you said that was because they didn't have any material or something?
Besides, I couldn't get promoted anyway, I guess. They had a few books, not very much.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was it like being a teenager?
Being what?
A teenager. Yeah. You must look around you and see the teenagers these days. And how is that different? How are you different from them now?
Well, for one thing, we never used to drink so much. Right out in the open. Of course, there was no dope in those days. And people never used to live with each other. Now it looked like people just live with each other 2-3 years. Sometimes they leave each other, and sometimes they get married. There used to be teenage drinking, I remember. Of course, I never did drink much in those days. I remember a few instances. Maybe when I was about 15, we'd have a liquor store here. And a pint maybe was about $3. And 3-4 of us used to get in together and get an older person to buy a pint for you. And you'd give him a drink to pay him. And then you'd drink the rest together, you know. I remember doing that 2 times. Once there was three of us wanting together to buy a pilot. And we finished it while we're standing up, we're just passing the bottle round and round. Take one drink, pass it. He takes the drink back. Maybe we finished that pint in 5 minutes. And I went home to my Uncle Dan's house. And I went to bed. I just start sweating. I remember my uncle saying, "Gee, what's the matter with him? Wonder how come he went to bed so early without making shavings or drinking milk or anything." They never found out. They never found out. And another time too, we went in together again. We got one old man, I don't want to mention names, to get a pint for us. We passed it to him to take a drink, and before he passed it back in one swallow, one drink, he drank 2/3 of the pint. So we had only a little bit. That was all. After that, I never drank for a long time. I think one of the thing that really helped was I heard my Uncle Dan Cipri telling another person once that Simeon is nobody's fool. And he was pretending to drinking, you know. And well, I just said to myself, if that's the way my Uncle Dan thinks, I'll just be nobody's fool. So I never drank. Even when I was in the army, over a 2-year period, I never. First, I started with one beer maybe only on a Saturday night, nothing during the week, or nothing on Sunday, a Saturday night only. Then when I got out, 2 years later, I wasn't going over 3 or 4 on a Saturday night, the whole Saturday night. It was only after I got married I started drinking. I started drinking a lot. And then I quit once because I had beat up Josephine. I didn't know about it. One morning, woke up. We were living in the old house at the time. I woke up and the sun was shining in the house early in the morning. It was beautiful outdoors. I had headache. I had to get up. I had to work. Got up and walked halfway across the house and I see her bra in the middle of the floor. I must have beat her up, I said to myself. I went over to her and I looked at her face. She's still sleeping. But no marks on her. I told her, "Get up, I want breakfast." She said, "Cook for yourself." I told her, "What happened? You beat me up last night." But lucky I was protecting my face. I looked at her and it was blue around here. I didn't hurt her though that much. Then I said I quit. I wouldn't drink no more. She jumped up right there. I don't know how she believed me. I'll cook for you. So she cooked for me and I just quit drinking. And then I started again. And little by little, I fell back in the same pattern. Even worse, over 7 to 10 year period, maybe. Toward the end, I'd start passing out around the table every night. And I wake up in the morning, in bed, work all day, couldn't wait till 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock comes, start drinking again. Got to where I was drinking 1 quart every day. And then I got into another accident, and it taught me, I guess, I hope. That was June 26, 1973. Remember the day so good. I went up the hill in a Ranger. You know what a Ranger is? Mm-hmm. It's a half track. Mm-hmm. I have one. I got it down at my uncle's house right now. We were going up the hill and I tipped over in it, right? And this ended the runway, going up to the runway, instead of going on the road all the way up to the turnaround. I started making shortcut. And I guess the bank was too steep, and there was a lot of people in the trailer, and there was four or five of us on the truck. On the Ranger itself. And we did a somersault, the thing tipped over. It landed on four of us. We all ended up in the hospital. Josephine was in the hospital at the time too, for some other reason. Ended up in the hospital. I stayed in the hospital for 3 weeks, I think, or a month. I was all crushed around here. Most crushed. I guess I got hurt more than the other three. The other three went home, or the other two went home within 2-3 days. And then another one stayed there for a couple of weeks, maybe. He stayed there about 3 weeks. When I came home, Josephine was home. She got home about a week ahead of me from the hospital. And, the first day I was in the hospital, you know, I was worrying about 5 o'clock. I was wondering how I'm going to make it after five. I wonder if I live. I got to where at 5 o'clock I have to have a drink. And, 5 o'clock came, and I just feel myself just like going like that. To see if I was living, I guess, I don't know. To see how I feel in the inside. But no, I want a drink. 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. The night passed, I was living. Same way the next night. Well, after 2 weeks, I was still craving for drinking. It went away a little bit. I wanted to come home before Josephine and empty all the little caches I had here and there. Bottles. Some little bit, some more. Some full ones, some half full. Here and there, different places I had caches. I wanted to be at Josephine home and throw them all out. And try to stay away. For a while anyway. Anyway, when I came back, Josephine was home ahead of me. And the first chance I got that evening, and she was not looking, I kind of looked here and there. Everything was all clean. I didn't find one bottle. I'd never mentioned nothing. Never mentioned nothing. And 1 month went by. Just to moan after... working in the post office, but at night when it's time to go to bed, I'd start moaning. It hurts inside, you know, by being crushed, ribs broken, my shoulder was dislocated. So in the evening when it's time to go to bed, I start moaning. It hurts. And look at me and say, I wonder if you'll ever drink again after all that suffering. I never seen nothing. And that was 6 years ago, a little over 6 years ago. And I haven't touched a drink. Except by accident. We were over in Rome, you know. And I took a bottle of wine by mistake. I thought it was water. Well, they leave it on your table, you know. You don't understand the Italian writing, so I poured some in my cup. It was a small bottle, like a soda bottle. They serve you, they come to meals, they serve you 2 quarts of wine, 1 quart of wine each, free, you know. We just leave it there, we never drink it. Anyway, I made a mistake with this one. I poured it in my cup and it bubbled up. The water bubbled up over there too, so you can't tell the difference. Water bubbled up like soda. I drank it. Took a big swallow while I was here. It was wine. Tasted good. I told you it's in that wine. Tasted. Drink it. So I drank it with my supper. Felt bum for 2 days. Then coming back from New York to Seattle on the same trip, I had about 4 or 5 little glasses of champagne. I sure wanted them that time, but Josephine kept looking at me with, you know, with the side of her eye. So I had to quit. I haven't drank since, and I hope I never drink again. I live a lot better. I'm happier. I don't have to wake up in the morning and think to myself, see, I wonder what I did last night, and try to put things together. See, I wonder if I did anything wrong. I wonder if I scolded someone. Might have hurt someone. So I'm scared all day till about noon. I never hear nothing. I said, I guess I didn't do anything. Now I don't have to worry about things like that. Marie, you know Marie, she got married August 17th. And I had to give a speech in Kaikuk. No one else to talk. And it's no good. It's no good when someone doesn't say anything at, you know, special occasion. Funeral or marriage, potlatch. Some kind of award or anything. And people get together like that, no one says anything. It's no good, it's sad, they say, you know. In Indian way, they say, which means, you know, don't look right. It's sad when someone doesn't say anything. So I made a speech and I thanked the people, you know, for coming to Marie's wedding. They gave her a lot of gifts, thanked her. And toward the last part of the speech, I directed it toward Marie and David. And I closed telling them, you know, that this little sentence that I saw in a magazine. I closed my speech saying that life is beautiful without alcohol. Everybody was real happy. They say that was the best speech they heard for a long time, you know. But it really is. I hope I don't drink again.
Are you concerned a lot about the drinking that goes on with young people?
I am. I start worrying about my boys a lot now. They're getting pretty old. I think Paul is 18. Pete, Simeon Jr. is 16 maybe. Kevin is 15. Marvin is 14. 13 or 14. Oh, I'm gonna have a lot of worries in a few years. But thoughts and beliefs.
What can a person do?
I don't think there's very much a person can do besides example. You know, you see a lot of people that have good, I mean, a lot of teenagers that have good families, their mother and father don't drink. Very few are blessed like that. And their children are worst, you know. I try to think of ways to try to tell them not to drink when they're getting to the age, but there's just no way except by example. Pardon?
I guess it's just that something happens to people when they're drinking and Well, what do you think about the future of young people? How that would be as far as what might happen to them, how their life, what they might have in store for
them. A lot of them, the way I see it, don't have a future. You know, they're just wrecking their lives by, especially by dope. I was out firefighting, you know, this summer, first time in my life. And you see them passing a cigarette. 9 o'clock in the morning. I mean, not a cigarette. I don't know what you'd call it, but it's dope. You know, it passes it back and forth.
What do they do after that?
Well, I couldn't tell the difference, but I seen these two boys taking a break once in a while. I know they were smoking, but they did a lot of work that day. I guess they make them feel good and they don't feel tired or anything. They were running back and forth between us because we need a chainsaw, and we had only one chainsaw in the group that day. So we would holler for them when we needed the chainsaw. Maybe the tree was too big to chop with a Pulaski. And to save time, you would call them. They'd be right there, running back and forth between all of us. And it just makes you feel good. And they talk and talk to me to try it, you know. Try one or two puffs. But I'm afraid to. I'm afraid I might get hooked, you know.
It might be something like alcohol.
I think it's worse than alcohol, the way I see it. And those kids that are using those don't have a future, the way I see it. They're just wrecking their lives. They're wrecking their bodies. I noticed with the group that I was with, when we go to different camps, they buy some, you know, and I noticed there's a lot of smoking. And then nothing for a few days. Maybe somebody, another group of people would come into our camp, or we would move again, but soon there was a lot of smoking. But there was no trouble, no fighting, no disagreement within our group that we were with. Good cooperation. Everybody did their part. But I noticed there was a lot of smoking. Yeah. Well, I don't know how to express it, but the way I see it. They'll just end up dead. Jump in the river or blow the head off. Or they say using dope, doing things like that is, you know, it's funny. It's funny to you. You read about that too and stuff. Make me worry a lot. I think it's much easier to get even here in town. By people traveling. And they won't tell where they get it, you know.
Young people doing some of those things, like, or maybe because of dope they're doing things to themselves.
Yes. And alcohol. I told them in my speech in Kaikup that a lot of dreadful things happen. You know, during drink, a lot of people cry. A lot of tragedies. We're losing a lot of young people. That wouldn't have happened if they were sober. No. Yeah. There's quite a few people that were young. Lose their life one way or the other. Yeah, that's quite a few. Shooting, you know, young people. Fortunately, we have, let's see now, 1, 2, 3, 4 from around here that shot themselves and are still living. But we still didn't teach them. You know, go back to the same way.
Did any of that kind of stuff go on when you were growing up?
Not that much. I don't think we lost anyone in my teenage days or younger days, say maybe between 15 and 25, maybe. I don't remember losing anyone by alcohol. I don't remember. We've had a lot of, quite a, within the last few years, we've had, let's see now, 5 or 6 self-inflicted wounds, fatal wounds, in the last few years, you know, alcohol related.